favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Yeah, it's that special time of the year, isn't it?
It is!
It's a very special time.
Not only am I bursting into tears at my mom's place, it's Cronenberg Christmas!
Yes!
Every year at Thanksgiving, I'm sitting at my mom's place writing an episode about David Cronenberg, and every single time I'm just like talking about David Cronenberg, and my mom's like, at Thanksgiving! For the past 3 years, I've been doing this.
Oh, that's awesome.
And every year, my mom is like, you really like David Cronenberg, and I'm like, it's just Thanksgiving,
yes.
Because every year I'm writing the episode because we are always going into episode.
Mm-hmm.
So... we should probably introduce us.
Yeah, hi everybody. It's that annual time where it's very festive, and the red in this particular instance is very graphic compared to the usual Christmas red.
I'm so excited.
Yes.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. Happy Cronenberg Christmas. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is our other host, Anthony Fuentes.
Hey.
Happy Cronenberg Christmas. I'm very excited. This is our third installment. I'm excited. We are talking about Scanners from 1981 today.
Man, so this is the third in our Cronenberg series. The first one was The Fly.
Yes.
Which is, to this day, still our least listened to episode.
Woo!
Yeah. But you know what? It's, to me, one of my favorites, obviously.
Yes.
It was a great time and a great movie.
Yeah.
And then we followed it up with Videodrome.
Yes.
Which was last year.
Yes,
last year.
Which
I haven't looked at the numbers there, but
no.
I remember it's also...
I was texting Caitlin about it last night. Hi, Caitlin. And she was just like, yeah, once I got to the chest vagina, I had to cut it. I had to end it. And I was like, understandable. You might like Scanners.
Yeah.
I would say it's one of the more mild Cronenberg films.
It's a Cronenberg superhero movie.
It is totally his
take on that.
It's a Cronenberg superhero movie for sure. Don't give him any access to the Marvel superhero.
No, but I was watching this, I'm like, he'd do a goddamn good Batman if he took over Tim Burton's responsibilities in Batman 1989.
I mean,
Cronenberg could have done
didn't
this shit.
You like 89's Batman?
I did, but I'm saying, if you know, if there's an alternative,
I'd be
into Cronenberg doing it.
But David Cronenberg also did The Dead Zone.
Which
Stephen
seen.
King.
Yes.
Which is actually one of my mom's favorite Stephen King.
We've talked about this. Yes. Keith Sutherland's in that one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And my mom like hates David Cronenberg.
Oh, wow.
Like,
yeah, and here you bring it to a festive, wholesome holiday. Like, hold on, you know that head exploding gif right now? Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like cranberry juice, doesn't it?
Looks wonderful. And we're going to talk about it at length.
Yeah.
But, let's go ahead and get right into it. We are going to get a little... there is no window open. I don't know why
it's your ghost. It's your ghost.
Or is a window open? Hold on. It's the poltergeist. Okay, dead ass, closed. They're closed. That window is closed.
Hold on, this is actually a very good time for us to get into something slightly not Cronenberg-y, but I do want to know, what does dead ass mean? I hear this shit all the time.
Oh my god!
What is deadass? Explain.
It just means like, it's just millennial colloquialism or Gen Z colloquialism.
It seems Gen Z because I see one comedian use it. I don't see all of them use it, but he's definitely the youngest in my YouTube sphere that uses
it.
And it's so instinctive. So I'm like, it's just like deadass, blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, hold on. Why dead ass?
Why is the ass dead?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on.
Before we get into, you know, this magnificent masterpiece of a film, I gotta know what the fuck dead ass means. This is ridiculous to me.
It just means, like, dead serious. Like, literally urban dictionary, like, just means it's like, for real, very serious.
That's so weird. That's so, like I'm making a real point here, dead ass, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, like, I am... serious, I am telling the truth. I am not fucking around
here. No exaggeration here. Window is not
open. It's like when I... you know how every other word out of my mouth is either like or literally?
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay.
I just don't use dead ass very often.
Okay. No, you did it very good. That's why I was like, hey, that's pretty organic implementation there. Now's my time to figure this shit out.
Now's my time to ask what you mean. Yeah, it just means, like, literally.
Okay.
Because I say that all the time just because I grew up in Southern California and I'm a girl.
That's a vernacular. Yeah.
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 Anyway.
Oh, okay. No, the more you know.
Older millennials.
Yes. Dead ass, that was great advice. Is that how you use it now?
I would give you a 6 out of 10.
Okay. Now, like, 6 out of 10 is unacceptable to me.
Well, it has to be, you know, you have to be confident.
7 out of 10.
C's get degrees.
Yes, there you go. Anyways, let's go back. That was good. What does IMDb tell us about this one, Alex?
It is not a good one. A scientist sends a man with extraordinary psychic powers to hunt others like him.
Mm.
That's it.
No. I mean,
This
is a plotty movie.
Yeah.
It's a little,
my God. There is so much exposition in this movie.
But you know what? I got to say, the performances and even the dialogue's not bad. They deliver it in the way that they're... It's very in tone, I think, with the rest of the film.
So, for the most part, yes.
Yeah.
So, this bad boy was directed by David Cronenberg, was produced by Claude Erol, and was written by David Cronenberg. And the special effects I wanted to give a nod to, because they're very prominent in this movie, was by Gary Zeller.
I mean, it's a Cronenberg movie. The special effects are also the star of the show.
Yeah, there was also someone else who oversaw, and he's, like, pretty well known. His first name's Dick. That's all I remember, because his name was Dick, and I was just like, because I am 12 years old. The cast, we have Stephen Lack as Cameron Vale, Jennifer O'Neill as Kim Obrist, Patrick McGoohan as Dr. Paul Ruth.
He's good, though. I like Paul Ruth.
Yeah, he was good. And then we have Lawrence Dane as Braden Keller. All these people have full names, which is great. Hmm. It's not just like Paul. And then Michael Ironside as Daryl Revick. Mm. Easily, like, the most, like, distinguished, like, or, like, identifiable character in this movie.
I was watching it with one of my friends, and we were talking, and we were just like, damn, Michael Ironside back in the 80s would have been, like, a great Joker.
Oh, I mean, if
Nicholson wasn't able to do it.
Well, he has, he's, like, very Nicholson-esque.
A little bit, yeah.
You know
but,
what
like,
I mean?
He's got his own acting style that's not as, I don't know.
It's not exaggerated, but I'm talking about just from, like, looks alone. Like,
oh, yeah.
He has that kind of exaggerated.
He has that close-up look, so you get a close-up shot of the Joker.
He also has the crazy eyes.
Yep, mm-hmm, with Michael Ironside, definitely. Yeah. Shout-out to Phil, by the way. He's going to be a new L.A. resident, so one of the bros is going to be out there.
Woo!
And he was just like, hey, come by and watch Cronenberg. I'm like, yeah, fucking do it. Let's do it. And yeah, it's a great movie.
This movie is 103 minutes long, and man, does it feel longer.
It does feel longer.
Like,
I thought it was longer
when I went to see how long it was, which, first off, quick aside, I tried watching this at home for Thanksgiving, and I have a 6-year-old sister, and the first 10 minutes, someone's head just goes kablooey.
Yes.
And I had to pause it, because she came downstairs, and she was just like, what are you watching? And I was like, I'm not trying to traumatize you, mm-hmm. So we're going to watch something else.
Yeah.
We're going to turn on Firefly, which also is not child appropriate.
But, I mean, it's less fleshy, spongy, fucking head explosion, you know?
Lots of screaming, lots of gunfire, lots of sex.
Okay, yeah.
So, also not child appropriate. Although, I was around 6 or 8 when I started watching Firefly, so...
Okay, give her a couple years, you're fine.
So, this movie came out on January 14th, 1981 in the United States, and it came out 2 days later on January 16th, 1981 in Canada.
Oh.
This is a Canadian as shit movie.
It is. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it had a budget of $3.5 million and a box office return of $14.2 million.
That's okay.
Pretty good for David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that also later.
Okay, but let's real quick learn, as we always do, about how Canadian this production really is.
I mean, because David Cronenberg, just
Mr.
Canadian man himself. So.
His blood is, well, it's blood, because he's very good about using it, but...
It's
pulled together by maple syrup, obviously.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. You always make that joke.
Mm-hmm.
Every time Canadians come up, you're like, they bleed maple syrup.
They do.
And every single Canadian who's listening is just like, thank you.
There's other stuff, too. I just can't think of it right now. But, so having completed his previous film, the semi-autobiography, the semi-anthropomorphic. Having completed his previous film, the semi-autobiographical horror breakup drama The Brood, David Cronenberg began work on Scanners, an idea he'd had floating around under various names since, of course, the glorious time that was the 70s. Yes.
The glorious time.
It's not glorious at all. It's terrible. But a very early treatment from 1976 titled Telepathy 2000, not as cool a name, takes place in the future, begins with the protagonist, who is named Harley Quinn, telepathically sexually assaulting a woman in a subway, and was set as a spy movie. That is not a good premise. That is horrible. Jesus.
It's much more Cronenberg-y.
It is, but man, I mean, in the 70s, that would have made sense. It was a very grimy time, but in the 80s, you can't do that. No, maybe you can't. I don't know. But in this version, a company called Cytodyne Amalgamate, was breeding evil scanners to take over the world, and the U.S. government was employing good scanners to stop them. Good old America right there.
Good versus evil.
Look at Cronenberg. Then I don't know what the fuck changed there, but writer and director David Cronenberg has called Scanners one of his most difficult films to make, citing an incomplete script when the shooting schedule commenced, as well as a lack of constructed sets. So, according to Cronenberg, he would spend mornings prior to filming writing actual scenes out. Yeah. Wow, this seems so much more coordinated than...
Really?
To me, it does.
Interesting. Some of the writing's kind of hokey for Cronenberg, but that's just me. Some of it, I was just like, this is really cheesy, Mr. Cronenberg.
Well, that's why I kind of feel like it has that superhero vibe sometimes. But also, the world feels really fleshed out. It feels really, really...
Well, he's been working on the world since the 70s.
That's where you really see it,
I think. You know what I mean? Yeah, the world building is there.
It's there.
A lot of the dialogue is just a little... there's some one-liners where I'm like, this is cheesy. Mm-hmm. This is
That's where it feels a little Batman, a little Michael Keaton Batman. a little bit. I don't know. That's why, yeah. And the kind of scale that it has. Anyways, we'll get to it. But the film was rushed through production. Filming had to begin without a finished script and end within roughly 2 months. So the financing would qualify as a tax write-off, of course, because Canada.
Well, I was just going to say good old Hollywood bullshit money tactics Canada.
Oh, absolutely. That's when Vancouver was starting to get it. So not to mention two of the main characters, Patrick McGoohan.
I know. I was just like, where are you getting that?
McGoohan and Jennifer O'Neill fucking hated each other, which made for a tense shooting atmosphere. Wow, really?
Yeah. I didn't find a whole lot about this, but I guess they just did not get along. He probably, made a sexist comment, I'm assuming, or I don't know. So she said something about his glasses. I don't know.
That's funny. So why don't we hire a curvier dame here for these kind of brutes?
why are you making Mr. McGoohan, who looks very, manic in this entire movie?
But he, has that secret 1950s cadence behind him. It's
true. Why is he also, slumping in his seats the entire movie?
He is.
He's just
that's true.
It's very funny to me. Anyway.
But Michael Ironside was originally hired for a bit part of one to two scenes, and of course was paid $5,300 Canadian.
Yeah,
holy
that's it.
Shit. Okay, weird. So Scanners hurt. That sucks. Scanners hurried production did have a few unfortunate side effects of its own, actually. So the casting of Stephen Lack in the lead role is a rare misstep for Cronenberg, whose choices are generally difficult to a fault. Legend has it that Cronenberg cast Lack, not a professional actor, but a painter by profession, because he liked the clarity of his blue eyes. Okay, well.
Well, he does a lot of staring in this movie.
Yeah, and he's pretty stilted, but it kind of makes sense, I think, with the vibe of the film.
One of the largest criticisms was every single line delivery by Stephen Lack. They were just like, why does he sound so robotic?
He does. He sounds so stiff.
I personally thought it was intentional.
I thought it was a stylistic thing, for sure. I'm like, okay,
but then I learned it was because he's a painter, not an actor.
Wow, he looks like an actor.
He does have, the actor jaw and, the face. He does. All right.
Yeah. Oh, that's fucking weird. So the film was primarily shot on location in Montreal, Quebec, and Toronto, Ontario. The lecture scene was filmed at Concordia University and the Charles J. de... How do I say this?
Ballet.
De Ballet water treatment plant doubled as the bicarbonate amalgamate compound. Oh, there's fucking sci-fi ass names and like French true. Names.
God.
The future electronique building in the fucking A. You're just gonna keep doing this to me. How do you do it? Vaudreuil?
Doyen.
Provided the exterior for CONSEC headquarters.
Just speak like your tongue is numb, and you're fine.
Okay. This is where I need the booze. I'm living the yes. Dan Cronenberg moved the head explosion scene from the beginning of the film to about 10 minutes in for late moviegoers. Wow. That's a good call.
Yeah.
That's a very good call. To quote, people tend to come late at films. They walk in after the first 3 minutes, Cronenberg told Starburst. For me, films are really made for an audience, like the way poets read their poetry for reactions and make changes based on that. I used to sneer at test previews, but now I realize that it makes perfect sense. Damn. He's like, okay, how can I further fuck with these people?
I kind of like that.
I like that too.
I like that he at least admits, like, I'm making this for an audience. I'm not making it for myself. Like, yes, exactly. I'm making it to tell a story, but, like, for the most, I want it to be appealing to my audience.
I like that he's using the test screenings as, like, not like, how do we make this more commercial appealing? He's like, no, how do I push this button further?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's smart. That's very smart. But while filming the tenth conclusion, actually, Cronenberg shot two different endings. So, according to Michael Ironside, Revick, who plays Revick, obviously, he and Stephen Lack filmed a less exciting version of the ending. Quote, with one ending, we had this psycho battle between my brother and I, and it didn't work. We shot it right up until Christmas and sent the script to special effects wizard Dick Smith.
That's in the guy.
New York. Dick Smith, there you go. And asked him what he could come up with in terms of cutting edge makeup. Ironside explained, of course. You know, something that would give us more memorable battle and a different ending. Dick then came up with the idea of the exploding heads, and that was a very collaborative thing. Okay.
Hell yeah.
There you go. It worked out for me, I think. So, but of course, it's a Cronenberg movie, and special effects are a very big point in these. So, what's up? What's the deal here? How did this get...
Let's talk about special effects.
How do we get head exploding stuff so organically made?
So, production stills exist of shots in the final duel between Cameron and Revick, where the top of Cameron's head explodes, sending sparks into the air. Apparently, this climax was filmed, but like you mentioned before, David Cronenberg chose to omit it instead.
I've seen this still before.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I have not. So in the Criterion Collection edition of this film, the special effects team revealed how they pulled off the memorable head explosion scene.
Yes.
In the beginning. So with, quote, latex scraps, some wax, and just some bits and bobs, and a lot of stringy stuff that we figured would fly through the air a little bit better, they noted. according to makeup artist Stephen Dupuis, they even used leftover burgers.
Oh my God.
So, when other explosive techniques failed to give the desired effects, special effects supervisor Gary Zeller told the crew to roll cameras and get inside the trucks with doors and windows closed. He then laid down behind the dummy and shot it in the back of the head with a shotgun.
I heard about this. That's so dangerous.
And that is how we got... head explosion.
Oh my God.
But also, like, the most famous head exploding gif of all time. Like, you just see, like, pff,
oh,
like,
yeah.
It's so good.
Not only that, probably top explosions of all. Like, what other head explosion is there? Like, really?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
And this is done very well. Again, God, this movie is not as body horror-y as I was expecting.
No, same here. Like, lots of syringes. Which kind of threw
me... okay, so I actually wanted to bring this up. You see a lot of needles, but you don't see a lot of needles going into flesh.
That's true, but I always look away anyways.
Okay, well, spoiler alert for you. Like, they show, like, 6 or 7 needles in this movie.
Yeah.
You never see needles going into skin, which I kept expecting. I was like, come on, give me the money shot. Give me the money shot. Nope.
Yeah, this is... It's a weird one in Cronenberg's, like, whole...
This is also like his 7th movie. He's already done The Brood at this point.
Yeah, he's established himself.
Like, as a gross director.
That's true.
So, also, the brief yet impressively staged crash scene that's in this movie is also the last car crash sequence Cronenberg would film before the controversial Crash.
Which Crash we'll have to cover someday.
Oh, I can't wait until we cover Crash. Oh, that one's going to be fun to talk about.
Definitely. That is a theory episode right there.
Talk about sexual psychoanalytic blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that'll be fun. I'm down.
It's going to be fun.
Next Christmas.
Maybe. I have a long list of movies I want to get to. Okay, so Scanners was also all about making its special effects work at all costs, which is why Ironside's story, he has a very funny story about his eyes, like the white eyes at the end.
Yes.
They kind of fit the film perfectly. So there's this, he says, quote, "There's this scene where I'm set on fire and my head comes up and there's these scleral lenses that they put on your eyes and they had scratched all my corneas."
Ugh.
So he says, quote, "So the contact lenses they had made for me to change my eye color didn't fit properly because my eyes had been scratched." Yeah. Dick Smith happened to have with him Dustin Hoffman's eyes from Little Big Man, and they were actually oversized, and you normally wouldn't do this because they have to be fitted, but when you see me come out from under the coat at the end of Scanners, those blue eyes of mine are Dustin Hoffman's from Little Big Man.
Wow, okay. Huh. That, well, it's definitely had a little bit of uncanny valley going on.
Yeah,
there,
they're creepy.
Yeah.
So... And then some of the special effects were also done by the actors themselves. In an interview with Film Comment, Stephen Lack, who also is not an actor, recalled feeling under the gun during one of his first scenes on set, where, quote, "There we were, first day of Scanners, and they had me get into this 18-wheel truck with four gear shift levers and had me drive onto the shot. It was horrifying. I never drove such a thing, and I was pretty disoriented," he explained.
That is scary.
Quote, "We were set up on a feeder road onto the highway, and all the camera crew and staff were there, and some car on the highway slowed down to gawk, and the truck on the highway rammed them from behind. There was a death and sirens, and the whole crew jumped over the storm fence to help out. I was given a slight reprieve of an hour to figure out the gears," unquote.
Jeez. Wow. Okay. Filmmaking in the 80s, huh?
Right. Where was the stunt supervisor?
Yeah. What the? We've covered so many mishaps. That could have turned into some shit right there.
I mean, someone did die.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. But then also...
But also, this is why you don't rubberneck.
No. Oh, my God. Eek. Mm-mm. And then also the eye scratching thing. Like, I've had my eyes scratched, like, from, like, a bad contact lens when I was
younger.
That's
why I don't wear contacts.
I don't wear them either because of that shit. I got scars to this day on there whenever they check.
They're just like, oh, you have scars on your...
On my eyeballs.
On your corneas?
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they can see them.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things, too, where, like, the fact that they did... Ugh, it just throws me off because I know the feeling. There's, like, a very... It's not good. Ugh. Oh, Cronenberg. Anyways, so... But, of course, you know, eventually this movie did get released. So, the movie, while it wasn't an immediate success, did actually find success in the midnight movie circuit of the 1980s, which is our thing.
We talked about. Yes. We love our midnight movies.
Clearly. So, this will be in line with, like, Eraserhead and shit like that in the same kind of realm, I would imagine.
Can you imagine seeing Eraserhead and Scanners in, like, a double feature, like, no. Weirdness?
That seems like you're not sleeping that night.
No.
So Scanners was released in the United States on January 14th, 1981, by Avco Embassy Pictures, which we've also talked about, and grossed... Do it, Alex.
$2,758,147.
From 387 theaters in its opening weekend. And of course, it grossed a total of
$14,225,876.
At the box office. So there we go, good duo. So on Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 70% based on 37 reviews, which is big for a movie from this time. With a weighed average rating of 6.69 out of 10. So pretty successful, actually.
C's get degrees.
There you go. The site's critical consensus reads, quote, "Scanners is a dark sci-fi story with special effects that'll make your head explode."
These stupid head exploding puns in every single review is just so... One could call it mind-numbing, but I don't want to do that. But no, yeah, the amount of, like, mind blowing, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, shut up. We know someone's head explodes.
Anytime film reviewers get that little thing they can grasp on, every single one of them takes advantage of it. We've seen this time and time again.
I hate it. It's
hilarious.
Like,
and stupid.
Well, but they take it and then they run with it. And I'm like, it's funny, like a couple of times. Like the first couple of times I saw it, like I was like, okay, that's funny. But do you know any articles I found where it's like 5 mind blowing things you didn't know about scanners? I'm like,
Jesus,
I get it.
That's hilarious. It's, oh my God. Let's see a couple of them. Let's see. So, what do you go? Film professor Charles Derry, in his overview of the horror genre Dark Dreams, cited scanners as, quote-unquote, an especially important masterwork, and, of course, calling it the psycho of its day. That's high praise.
I know. I would not go that far.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that either. But in his review, in his review for the New York Times, Vincent Canby wrote, quote-unquote, had Mr. Cronenberg settled simply for horror, as John Carpenter did in his classic Halloween, though not in his not-so-classic The Fog.
Okay.
Scanners might have been a grand, what is it, Guignol treat?
It's a phrase. It's an Italian something something.
Whatever, bro. So instead, he insists on turning the film into a mystery. And mystery demands eventual explanations that, when they come in scanners, underline the movie's essential foolishness, unquote. Wow, okay. He was just...
A lot of people had a lot of wordy things to say about this movie.
I feel like Cronenberg does bring that out of people. He really does.
Yeah. Everyone has to put on their theory hats and be like, well, I think this movie... Mm-hmm. I mean, I do the same thing.
No,
but...
yeah, that makes sense. So Roger Ebert gave this movie 2 stars. He praised the special effects, but said Cronenberg failed to involve the audience in the telekinetic scanner's plight. Quote unquote, Scanners is a new horror film made with enough craft and skill that it could have been very good. If it could find a way to make us care about it, I don't think it does. I never had the feeling during the film that it mattered much who won or lost, who lived or died. Just so long as the special effects occurred on time and the movie's look of elegant chill was preserved. It was released almost the same time as Altered States, another horror film that was being linked with Scanners in some reviews. Okay, Ebert. Man. Yeah, even back then, he's just kind of like, just give me the goods. This isn't...
Well, I mean, he makes a good point because, like, at the very, very end, spoiler alert for a...
1981 film.
For a 1981 movie, a 50-year-old movie almost.
Oh my God, are you shitting me? No. Oh, it's almost a... Almost a 40-year movie?
A 40-year-old
movie.
40-year-old movie,
yeah. Yes.
I was off by a decade.
Yes. I'm like, 50, hold on, Alex.
I can do math. I can do math. But yeah, like, I mean, a 40-year-old movie, yeah. It's, like, you know, spoiler alert for that, but when What's-His-Face dies at the end, I was just like, I literally could not, I did not give a shit.
You're like, okay, so your rebel team won?
Yeah. Who won? I was like, who's winning? Like, what's going on?
Are the scanners free now? What the fuck?
Yeah, I was like, who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy? And I kind of didn't really care. Mm. I was watching for the special effects.
Yeah.
Because I know that's what Cronenberg's wheelhouse is.
That's true. That's very, very true.
Once I kind of got the feeling that I was like, oh, this isn't like a super psychosexual like film. Like I was like, okay, this is just a sci-fi, you know.
It is
it's a superhero movie.
That's true. It is a weird superhero movie.
Where this superhero dies at the end.
Kinda.
Batman.
Yeah. You know what?
Batman dies.
We'll talk about discussion. There you go. So a reassessment of Scanners in 2012 issue of Cine Action looks at the film in light of Cronenberg's use of allegory and parables in much of his work. So the argument is made that Cronenberg uses iconic imagery that refers directly and indirectly to the 30-something Scanners as 1960s political radicals, counterculture hippies, and as nascent young urban professionals. As a result, the film can be seen as, quote-unquote, as an oblique reflection on what might happen when the counterculture becomes the dominant culture. I have read some about this, too, where people are talking about this is a weird counterculture movie. I guess nowadays, that's been a very recent assessment, 2012, but yeah. Weird how like it goes for like over 20 years, 30 years without that.
Yeah, I think the further you go, the more they're like, oh, he's definitely making commentary on counterculture. And I'm like, I mean, he wrote this in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, that's enough time to reflect on counterculture, I guess. But I feel like at the same time, that does seem kind of a stretch. I don't know. That's hard to say.
Something to chew on, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. But of course, and now, we have ourselves some good old Letterboxd reviews. So, Scanners has a 3.5 out of 5 average rating out of over 29,000 reviews. Jesus fucking Christ.
People had a lot to say about this movie.
They do, they do.
Like, what? All of the reviews were like several paragraphs long.
So that's hard to pull from. Yeah.
So, I got a lot of the funny one-liners for this one.
Speaking of, somebody has a lot to say. Russman with 3.5 stars. Quote, unquote, most intense staring contest ever. Yeah. And of course, Wes with also 3.5 stars, quote unquote, a captivating documentary on what it's like to have a wine hangover. Oh my God. Wine hangovers are shit.
Yeah. So, funny story about the staring contest. When I was home for Thanksgiving, my sister, she was just like, do you want to have a staring contest? And I had just driven to San Diego. So my eyes, my eyes were dry. I was just like, I'd been staring and like, it was night. So like headlights, I'd just come from work too. Like I drove straight from work to San Diego. So I was just like, and she won both times of the staring contest. And she's like, I've never won a staring contest before. Cause like I couldn't keep my eyes open for more than 3 seconds cause my eyes were dry as shit. And she was thrilled, and that was just very funny. It reminded me of that.
You're like, the conditions are in your favor this time, but tomorrow I'm gonna.
But next time, you know, next time when I'm hydrated,
it's
on.
Hey, or did you just get back from playing outside, huh?
Stare into my eyes, little girl. But she's sick, so I let her have it.
Yeah, no, I get you, I get you. But Amaya with 4 stars, quote unquote, Cronenberg. Heads blow up, eyeballs melting, blood splattering everywhere. Me, smiley face.
This was me watching this movie. This is my exact
I can see that. That's hilarious. Of course, then Austin Gorski with 2.5 stars. Oh, quote unquote. Cool idea, but I wasn't digging it. It really took itself way too seriously. I didn't think the lead was very good at all. That being said, the ending was pretty awesome. So, okay, there you go. There you go, Gorski. Cool name. I actually like the name.
Sounds like a hockey player.
He does. Austin Gorski. He punched his fucking teeth out.
So, you know, it went on. We all know what Scanners is. We've seen someone's head explode before. Mm-hmm. We've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
That poor, poor Dennis Rader looking motherfucker. So in February of 2007, Darren Lynn Bousman. I should know. We should know who this guy is. Was announced as director of a remake of the film to be released by the Weinstein Company and Dimension Films.
Oh my God! Before, in the middle of dark times. Before we knew they were dark times, huh?
Yeah, right. This is before the dark times. Before the Empire.
Yes. Just waiting for that.
Thank you. So this guy, he directed the first or produced or did, he was involved with the first 3 Saw movies.
Okay.
And he also directed Repo the Genetic Opera. Like, he's involved in horror. Mm-hmm. Like, he's established, especially in 2007. Like, he was like on it.
Oh, yeah.
So the film was planned for an October 17th, 2008 release, but that date came and went without further announcements, and all the parties involved had since moved on to other projects, of course. So in an interview with him in 2013, he recalled that he would not make the film without David Cronenberg's blessing, which was not granted.
Okay, respectful. That makes sense. That makes total sense.
It's good. this was also the nearest thing to a conventional science fiction thriller that David Cronenberg had made up to that point. It obviously lacked the sexual content of Shivers, Rabid, or The Brood, and it was also the most profitable film that he had created up until The Fly 6 years later.
Such a good movie.
And so this was kind of his first step kind of into mainstream.
That makes sense. I think so too. I think he really established himself in terms of like doing a bigger scale movie.
Yeah. So I've seen The Brood. The Brood is fucking weird.
Mm-hmm. Is it like on scale terms though? Like, is it as wide reaching as you think Scanners is?
Don't know, because I love David Cronenberg, so my perception of what's wide reaching or what's popular is kind of skewed.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding, The Fly is by and large the most popular David Cronenberg film.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking though, just in terms of like the content, is it like corporations and big message here? Yeah, that's like this is like a sci-fi.
So quick movie. Aside, we are going to talk about The Brood eventually, but just a quick little synopsis: The Brood is actually one of David Cronenberg's more personal films because it isn't semi-autobiographical. Movie about his divorce. Like, this is kind of like how he coped with his like breakup.
Damn.
And it's very obvious.
Okay.
But yeah, so some have also made the connection of with the drug in the movie Ephemeral. It had an eerie similarity to the real life scandal of the 50s, as women had taken thalidomide during pregnancy, marketed as a relief from morning sickness, and began to give birth to children with physical deformities.
Good old 1950s. Jesus. Yes.
So I was just like, I did not consider that. And then I read it and I was like, oh, that is kind of like a tit for tat kind of comparison.
You can only take it if you sip water from your lead cup.
Right. So also in terms of legacy, Stephen Lack still keeps around his exploded head as well. Apparently it's a hit with fanboys. Lack told Film Comment, quote, "I went to a horror convention with my head twice. The entire convention space was filled with booths of people who had expanded on Dick Smith's original discoveries, and it was fantastic. People like to pose with the head."
Oh, you can charge a good penny for that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, Scanner still has those unforgettable images that are a David Cronenberg landmark. Like it or not, that exploding head will become an enduring movie moment forever.
Yeah, forever. Even to this day, when I see a thread pop and somebody uses it, everybody's just like, it starts another thread below.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people gotta, like, either talk about it, like, holy shit, where is this from? And when they say it, and blah, 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 Scanners. And blah, yeah, it's like a whole thing.
For sure. So, let's discuss Scanners,
yeah,
shall we?
Yeah, fuck yeah, let's do it. This is, what did you think of the movie? How did you...
I had never seen it prior.
Okay.
The only reason that I had kind of picked it for Cronenberg Christmas was because it seemed like one of the more well-known, like next to The Fly, from my research also it kind of proven to be correct, one of the more popular Cronenberg movies.
Yeah, definitely.
Or ones that most people have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to go talking about, like, Rabbit or Shivers necessarily, because while people might be aware of what it is, I don't think it's as embedded in, like, pop culture.
No.
As much as Scanners is.
Yes.
Like, even the image of, like, Michael Ironside being all like, oh, you know, like, the cover of it is also, like, kind of, like, I recognize it as Scanners. I recognize it as, like, a scary 80s sci-fi movie. So, I had never seen it before. I was really excited to watch it just because, like I said, I've seen the GIF.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, the snippet 1,000 times before, but I had never really understood, like, the whole concept behind it. So, it was really fun to watch. It does feel a lot longer than, like
yeah.
It feels a lot longer than it is. It's like an hour and 45 minutes, but it feels like a good 2 hours.
It does feel like a longer movie. That's for sure. I feel like it's also kind of a dense movie. Like, there's a lot happening within the scenes, even though, like, also feels like maybe the wheels are spinning sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird mix. Like, it goes right, like, because there's so much to each scene, I feel like.
Yeah.
Even them, you know, raiding places and like all that shit, and the it's hard to say. To me, it does feel like a superhero film in terms of the narrative, like in terms of the pacing, and in terms of like how it's what the objective of these guys, like they have to stop the bad guy. The bad guy's part of a conglomerate. Da da da. Like it's
right. I do really enjoy like the corporation kind of like the corp, because like we're also, I mean, we're in the 80s. Like we're kind of going into, well, this is also early 80s. So I would say, David Cronenberg kind of predicted like that, like mass conglomerate corporatization, like of like the later 80s.
He definitely also gave it that dystopian twist.
Yes,
like he really hammered that in there.
Yeah, well, he kind of like, that's what I liked, is that combination of that kind of gave that vibe of like, this is where we're going and this is where we are.
But you're right. But see, we also looked at Videodrome, and it had that same almost millennial message of, this is how we're communicating, and information is like this, and this is the direction we're going, because we're all connected.
He has amazing foresight.
He has significant foresight. This is like his, this is the corporatocracy, and your counterculture motherfuckers can try, but, like, is it going to be useful? Is it, you know?
Like,
I don't know. To me, also, it screamed Akira in some points.
Interesting.
It totally did.
We're gonna have to, like, the amount of times we reference Akira,
it's not necessarily horror, but
it's body horror.
It is body horror.
It is body horror. I would make an argument that I think it's coverable.
I think so too.
Yeah, it might pop up in a birthday month this year. I'm thinking about it.
That'd be cool.
Because I think that's the only way we can get away with it.
I think so too. But in terms of, again, listeners, if you've never watched Akira, I mean, it's like streaming. It's on Hulu. Yeah, Hulu.
That's where I watched it.
It's an old 80s anime that deals with dystopian kind of like melodrama and corporatocracy and government corruption.
Yeah.
And like it's a lot of the imagery, I feel like, I know Akira was made later, so maybe it pulled some shit from Cronenberg or something as it was getting written, because there's a lot of one-to-one almost dystopian sci-fi scenes. And there's lots of head explosions in Akira also, like a lot. So keep that in mind. Yeah,
it's good. But it's all animated, so it kind of takes the edge off.
But it looks cool animated.
Oh, it's awesome.
It looks fucking
dope. It's so good.
Yeah. But it has such a weird, like...
It made me want to join a motorcycle gang.
It does. Absolutely. I want to wear red jackets. I can't pull off red jackets. I'm too... I don't know.
Too dorky?
Too dorky, too short. I think you got to be a lanky bro to, like, rock a red jacket. I don't think a little guy rocking a red jacket's not going to work.
Makes you look like a douchebag.
It's like, hey, yeah, I'm contributing.
Well, no, then it gives you little man syndrome.
Yeah, it does. It's too bright a jacket.
Because then everyone's just going to think you're, like, aggressive.
Yeah, exactly. You're just you can't be on my bike. Me.
Thank you, Milhouse.
Right. No, but I mean, it's a good movie. I really liked it, actually.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot more than I thought I would.
You know what? If anyone ever needs, like, a good... Because we've covered Cronenberg quite a few times. If you want... As opposed to The Fly and Videodrome, which are very intense movies.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely, this is a better place to start, I think. I think it's a good gateway drug to other Cronenberg movies.
That's, gateway drug is a good way of putting it.
If you watch it and hate it, good chances... The rest of the Cronenberg movies, not for you.
No.
If you watch it and love it and you're like, I need more.
Mm-hmm.
Like when, if you're like me, when like everyone's getting stabbed with needles and you're just like, come on, show me the money shot.
Yes.
Then other Cronenberg movies are probably for you.
Yeah. You know, I would say, think about when you go to Taco Bell and you ask for hot sauce and they're like, they just give you the sauce, but they give you all of them. There's like mild, there's hot. And then there's the one in the black label that's like very hot.
Diablo or whatever.
Yeah, Diablo, whatever it is. This is the mild one. This is the mild sauce from Taco Bell of Cronenberg movies. And The Fly's the hot one, I would say, and Videodrome is like, yee. Well, I don't know.
We haven't watched the rest of them, compare them. I would say Videodrome is like the sriracha.
You think so?
It's grotesque. It's not as bad as like The Brood.
Okay, I haven't seen The Brood yet, so I don't know. I can't say that.
Yeah, like The Brood,
Habaneros?
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, like, habanero sauce?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a little Tabasco-y. It's acidic. It's got some vinegar in it.
Okay,
grotesque. It's disgusting.
See?
It made me uncomfortable.
But this is like the flavor of hot sauce. It's mild.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to get grossed out. No, I mean,
it'll only be really offensive to boring white people.
Yeah, there you go. You get one real graphic scene with the head explosion and a couple graphic scenes here, but like nothing crazy.
No, even then, like, you know, when the car explodes, like who hasn't seen a car explosion?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
But anyway, yeah. The Scanners, it's very mainstream for Cronenberg.
I would say that too.
I mean?
It still feels Cronenberg as well.
It's very like
it's him.
Okay,
yeah.
Talk about what you were saying. Like you want Cronenberg to do a superhero movie because of this movie?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh man.
He would have made a bitchin' Batman with like the way he shoots exteriors and cityscapes.
It's true.
He would have made Gotham look fucking awesome.
I will say he did make Vancouver look futuristic and menacing.
He did, and Michael Ironside is the Joker. All right, give me that. Give me Goldblum
Michael
as Bruce
Ironside.
Wayne. Give me Goldblum as Batman. No, he would not be good.
I was like, are we talking about 80s? Like, come on now.
But no, I think honestly, this is a good representation of his visual style for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of the shots, I was like, they're very like intentional.
Yes.
Like, I would say that like, you can definitely see, like, there's definitely a vision there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So this movie, like so many others we covered, was rushed up. What would you have changed, Senorita Webster?
Someone give this man time to write, please. Like, he's a good writer.
He is.
He's such a good writer. Yeah, I would just give him that opportunity to write and, like, because, like, some of the lines, like, obviously, like, were not workshopped. He did not have time to review things, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if he was writing scenes the morning they were meant to be shot, that's intense. Also, that doesn't give actors enough time to, like, read and really get into or, like, memorize lines or really get into it.
Like, would my character say that? They're just like, well, okay, my character's saying it.
He's certainly saying it. So yeah, I think that's definitely part of it for me. Just the writing is the only thing that really fell short for me.
Yeah.
I think I wanted it to be more, Cronenberg-y.
Mm-hmm. Like, more sophisticated.
Not even that. I was expecting a little bit more grossness. I was expecting a little bit more body horror, which is like... I think that was just me going into it with high, like...
No, same here.
High body horror expectations. Because not all of his movies... I'm looking at his filmography right now. Not all of them are, you know, super, super body horror-y. Yeah. A lot of them are. But especially in the early, like, in the late 70s, early 80s.
When he's establishing himself,
he's, like, establishing himself as the body horror director. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big part of it. But, yeah... And we're also, if we're going to talk about spicy, spicy Cronenberg films, Dead Ringers.
Dead Ringers. I heard that one, yes. Oh. When you were talking about that, that is...
I wrote a paper about that in college, and holy shit.
Which hot sauce is Dead Ringers? Yeah, think about it.
Frank's Red Hot.
Oh, it's Frank's. Yeah. Okay.
All like, right. It's for me personally, but, you know, again, very vinegary.
Yes.
I'm putting it in the same category as The Brood, but, like, better. Like, okay. Or more, like, you know, sophisticated. Because The Brood is, like, it's just so, like, it's fucked.
It's early Cronenberg.
It's early. It's fucked up. It's, like, when you first learn that hot sauce exists and, like, what you see on the table at, like, a Denny's or whatever, and it's just Tabasco sauce.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So if we're looking at the scale, because it's very interesting.
No, this is a weird... We're going to do, like, a hot ones.
We are. We're
like Cronenberg.
What would you say, Mexican Mama Salsa? Like, which Cronenberg movie is that level of just, like, this recipe's been in the family forever? It's going to fuck up your tongue.
Ooh. I mean, if you're going to do that... I haven't seen all of them, so I can't say for sure.
So out of the ones we've...
Out of the ones that I've seen...
Which one would be Mexican Mama Salsa?
I take it back. It's not Frank's Red Hot Dead Ringers.
Would be Mexican Mama Salsa.
It's like Mexican Mama's going to fuck you up.
Yep, that's a... She's like, everybody says my shit's spicy. And you're like, no, Mom, not this year. It's not as spicy as Thea. It's like, oh, fuck. Yeah.
And then you're like eating more chips just to like combat. You're like,
the water's not helping. Yep. It's making it worse.
No, it's just spreading it around. Yeah,
Okay, don't touch your face. Gotcha.
Lots of jalapenos. Don't touch your face.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I feel like for this thing, though, maybe revamp some of the cast that wasn't Michael Ironside.
Yeah, it absolutely.
I would also stick with the not Revic, Ruth, Dr. Ruth. He was pretty good too.
He was really good. Yeah, like he has the good, like, manic, like, but also weirdly calm, like, old man doctor vibes.
Just give me Goldblum and Gina Davis. Bring them in this movie instead.
We don't see them till later.
I know, but like they. But...
Which apparently, The Fly. Going back, because this is Cronenberg, so we can talk about... We can digress as much as we want, as long as it's about Cronenberg, right?
Yes.
The Fly apparently ruined Jeff Goldblum for my grandma forever.
Oh, no. But he had such a wonderful career after that.
Doesn't matter. She was so grossed out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
My mom told me this, because we were talking about Cronenberg movies, as you do. And, she was just like, your grandma... Couldn't look at Jeff Goldblum after The Fly.
Jeez, that's awesome.
And I was just I love it. And oh, I was just like, did it ruin Jeff Goldblum for you, Mom? Because like obviously she was so much younger, and she was just like, no, no, it didn't.
You're like, please, if I can play Gina Davis' role, I would.
I'd shoot him in the head. It's okay. Yeah. I'd end the suffering.
You got what you needed out of before that. That's fine. Oh my god. No, I don't know. I think this needs besides some of the key members of the cast, like it could have been a little more filled out. And also, you're right, maybe one or two more graphic scenes. And I think you would have had, a stew going, baby. It would have been great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still good to me. To me, it's still a very good movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I like it a lot. But it is also, I don't know, like incomplete in some ways. Mm-hmm. It feels like. It does feel like a rush job in certain points. Because you're like, at the end, you're like, well, okay. Well, that's how it turned out.
And then also, I think it's very funny that Michael Ironside is just like hiding under like a coat. And then he's just like, we did it. And I was just like, what? What did we do? What is going on? Like, that was a very weird ending to me. And it didn't, like, have, like, I felt very unfulfilled by the end of it. Like, I needed more.
You know what, though? It does have, I think, it does fit with the tone of the whole movie, though. Like, it does kind of have that almost stilted kind of way of, sci-fi way of presenting itself.
Yes. Something else I did forget to mention that didn't make it into the outline. This movie has two sequels.
Yes, that's so fucking weird when I learned about that.
Yeah, they're like super dog shit from my understanding.
Well, I know Cronenberg had nothing to do with that.
Yes, that's why they're dog shit. So Scanners 2, The New Order, which just sounds fucked.
That sounds so terrible.
And that came out in 1991, and then Scanners 3, The Takeover from 1992.
If you're giving it a subtitle that's that fucking generic, it's never gonna be good.
Correct.
It's never gonna be good.
And then there's spinoffs called Scanner Cop.
Okay. That was lamer than even my other joke. Jesus.
And then Scanners The Showdown, also known as Scanner Cop 2. Scanner Cop is from 1994, and Scanner Cop 2 is from 1995.
How is that? That's such... I couldn't even think of a lamer title. What the fuck?
Yeah, and Daryl Lynn Boozman did direct Saw 2, 3, and 4.
I was going to say More Scanning would have been a good subtitle. Scanners 3, More Scanning. That would have been it. Yeah.
Also, when I was researching this episode, the amount of times it was like Office Depot, and it was showing me scanners. I was like, that's not what I want. That's not what I'm asking for. I want the David Cronenberg movie. But yeah, so it spawned obviously sequels and spinoffs and like that remake, obviously. But none of those projects involved Cronenberg, so naturally they're dog shit.
Yeah, I know, and he wouldn't approve anyways. He's not even approving a remake with one of those profitable directors of his time, you know?
Yeah, and then also, in 2011, there was a TV reboot that was announced, but also because they didn't get, you know, the seal of approval from Mr. Cronenberg, nothing's really gone forward with that.
Well, good. Fuck him. Yeah, don't do it. So, I mean, to me, I can see why this movie is very sacred for a lot of people. Like, I think it's definitely a good example of his early style. Mm-hmm. And it clearly, like, that's the thing about, like, flawed good movies. Like, people get pretty attached to the flaws.
Yes.
Like, people get very, like, it is what it is because of all the elements working and not working together.
Surprisingly, because I don't have nostalgia goggles for this,
it
kind of makes it easier for me to be like, okay, this is kind of shitty. But I still really enjoyed it. Like, mm-hmm. It's still very much a Cronenberg movie. It's still something that's very enjoyable in his repertoire of work.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't stand out necessarily. Like, it fits in with all of his other shit. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah. See, to me, I would still say it's a good movie. It's mm-hmm. just more of a subdued Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Which is something we're not used to. But it does have the fundamentals. Like, it absolutely has the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, we were kind of just talking about this. I kind of want your thoughts on this. So, would you want to see a reimagining of this movie if it ever got a seal of approval from the big man himself?
No.
No? You just want to let Sleeping Dogs fly?
Let it be.
I mean, it's almost a 40-year-old movie.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I don't... As much as, you know, the Saw director would have been interesting, it would have been interesting only because he'd make it more graphic. Yeah, I don't think in terms of actual good filmmaking, you would need, like, an Ari Aster. You'd need the director of goddamn Midsommar. Somebody at that scale to, like... Because, to me, you remake a movie, but you also have to make it better and your own.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, like, director's gonna have to have their own personality, their own take on something, and make it their way. Yeah, I don't think you do that with the Saw person. You're getting a script from somebody
else. It's true. Yes. However, that being mm-hmm. said, hear me out.
Okay.
David Lynch's Scanners.
Oh, it would be good, but Lynch is too old.
I know.
He's too old
but
now.
But, like, let's go back in time.
I don't think you can do it from a director from the era. It has to be a newer, hungrier director that's establishing themselves now.
Fair enough.
I don't think you can get somebody who was like, I could have made Scanners back then, actually.
I agree. Yeah. I hear you. Point made. I retract my suggestion.
Would have been cool, though.
Would have been cool. But Ari Aster, I don't know if he would have been... I don't think he'd be able to do it. Like, it, not in, like, the same way that, like, the story and the characters and, like, just overall the world is inherently a little hokey.
You're right. That's That's a good point. The way I'm looking at it is Ari Aster's ability to have more stilted kind of characters work within the film.
Right.
Which is something Cronenberg's actually good at also. Even though fucking Lack is really pushing his fucking... He's pushing his luck. Yeah. But then also, I think Ari Aster is able to build two scenes. Mm. In every one of his movies, there's a few key scenes which you cannot turn away from. And I think if he had an opportunity to utilize this, like, mind-blowing, the fundamentals of what Scanners is, he can build some pretty bitchin' scenes in between what would probably be a longer movie, I would imagine.
Okay, out of this list, I'm looking at horror directors right now. Eli Roth.
No.
Robert Eggers.
Oh, maybe.
Jordan Peele's
Scanners would be awesome.
I was thinking Jordan Peele's Scanners would be pretty awesome.
That'd be good. No, I would love that. I think that would be great, actually, because then... he'd be able to do it different enough where he'd bring that flavor there. Because Jordan Peele's acting, the way he directs his actors is not stilted at all.
It's true.
Even the ones that are a little monotone, they're monotone in a very kind of like a menacing kind of way.
Totally.
Particularly Last of Us. Last of Us.
The Last of Us.
Jordan Peele would do a great Last of Us movie also.
I mean, yes. Jordan Peele, I think, would be good. Karen Kusama would be good. She did Jennifer's Body.
Yes, Karen Kusama.
Because if we're talking like more robust character development, she'd be good at it. But yeah, Jordan Peele, I think, would be really, really good.
It'd be fun. No, that'd be different too. That'd be way different.
But it would be a different reimagining that, like, takes a 2020 stance on, like, what future corporatization, blah, 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 blah. Like, it would, like, a 2020 reimagining of that. That would be really cool.
You know what? Jordan Peele was offered the live-action Akira. He turned it down. So this would be a good alternative for him.
It's true.
Yeah. It'd be a good
Jordan Peele, if you're listening.
Please.
Consider getting...
I would consider just
kneeling before the king.
Mm-hmm.
Asking, come on.
You got it, dude. He'd do it.
No. He'd say yes to Jordan Peele.
He would. He absolutely would.
I'd hope so, anyway. So, would you rather be a scanner or work at Contech as a lackey?
I feel like Contech pays pretty well.
They seem to have good health. They have a good dental program.
You live
program.
In the city, and they're like, it's not a burden. You're like, yeah, I could come
to Yeah, but then you have to, like...
You could get murdered.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And then, like, but then you remember, like, the very end when it's just, like, first of all, those 80s computers, like, command, colon, da-da-da.
Yes.
Like, I was like, holy
DOS,
shit.
DOS, good old, that pre-DOS, actually, jeez.
That, like, there's a scene where he's, like, Stephen Lack is standing in a room filled with computers, and I was like,
Buddy.
How far we have come. I was watching it, and I was just like, this is... In the context of the movie, the epitome of technology.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. This is, like, as high as it goes.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, holy shit.
Now that shit's, like, not even, like, the power of your phone.
No.
Not even the power of the phone.
No, I don't even think it would work if I plugged it into the wall.
Mm-mm.
Like, so I was just like, holy shit.
Jeez.
But, yeah.
I mean... Being a scanner would be pretty cool, though. But I mean, I feel like you.
But then
it's
I
also
have
kind
to
of miserable.
Go into hiding,
yeah.
And then, you know, because like my whole like, I would I rather be at the beck and call of a scanner, being like, hey, you know, we're gonna make other scanners,
mm-hmm.
or be a scanner and then have to like deal with like, because like having to deal with listening to people's thoughts 24/7.
Yeah, I'd want to be a good scanner.
I mean, yes, we would be good scanners.
Yeah.
But.
But I feel like the
all the good scanners get murked, though.
That's true, though. You're right.
Like,
that's when they get recruited, and you're like, oh, you're not part of my posse? Well, the other people can get you, so you're fucking dead.
Right.
See, that's the thing about this movie. The world building was really good.
Yeah. Like, it's a good... Yeah, and then also, like, you have, like, that poor artist guy who's just trying to live his life in peace. And then, like, freaking Cameron shows up and is just like, hey, can you help me out? And then all of a sudden, like, a swarm of, like, people with shotguns descend upon mm-hmm. his little hidey hole and, like, light him up.
I, you know what? That brings me to another point that we gotta talk about real quick. We gotta talk about something. The shooting scenes in this movie, the gun violence, so good.
Yeah.
I am like... Every shot counts when it actually hits. Like, it's just not just like, psh, we're down. They're like, ow, my fucking shoulder, and then just fucking dead. Like, This movie does gun violence incredibly... It's like a RoboCop level of just it's like, realistic. Holy shit, that guy got shot.
Well, the other guy, he got shot with a shotgun, like, twice. One mm-hmm. in the leg and then in the back.
Yep.
He was like, I'm done. He's like, I'm tapping out.
Yes, these textured gun wounds, like, it's so fucked up.
To be fair, that is where a little bit of the Cronenberg goodness kind of floods in. You get that flavor.
Yep, 100%.
You get that truffle oil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Anyways, I don't know. As the adult in me wants to be a lackey for the benefits. And just like, the like look at it, like, it's not a bad gig. But, like, also...
Like, they seem like they have a good 401k
they do,
program.
They do. Like, you see, they're like, yeah, I can retire at 50.
Also,
I'll be
like,
fine.
A part of me just wants to be inherently, like, fuck the man.
Yes, yeah, that's the thing, too. I kind of like the idea of just, you know, giving it... Because I personally think the system's kind of fucked up sometimes. And if you have the power to do whatever you can about it, or make cool art, or mm-hmm. just get into people's minds, it'd be interesting. It'd be fun, at least. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it'd be a scanner. But also, you know, I'm young and stupid still, so.
Yeah, that's true. Scanner would be fun. Scanner would be fun. You know, depends the whole day. I'm gonna have
but
to make
you know
decision.
What? The scanners in the movie, they owned a house.
Okay, you're right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they clearly did something. And also, how hard can it be to steal from people if you can read their minds?
That, and you really don't want to be a lackey when the scanners decide to infiltrate the base.
And remember when they did, and, like, the computer exploded?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
And the lackey was right there, and he was the one who had to, like, fix it. And the guy was just like, you're going to stay here and fix it. And, you know
that's
what I mean?
The thing. The bosses aren't giving you all
your
info
collateral
anyways.
Damage.
Yeah, exactly. The bosses aren't giving you all the info. They're like, just do your fucking job. I'll deal with it. Unplug it. But, sir, we can't unplug it.
Like, you're
not as fun.
No.
Yeah.
You're collateral, and then, you know, you're definitely, like, you know, yeah, you're a non-exempt employee for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, you're getting bossed around all day.
That's true. But, I mean...
We are getting way too into this.
But that paycheck number... No, a scanner. I think a scanner would be better. Mm-hmm. You have a lot more options as a scanner, even though every once in a while you're going to have to go into hiding and change your identity.
Whatever. You know, how hard can it be in the 80s when you can read people's minds?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Now, when everything is on camera and you're being recorded, like, we're living in a surveillance state, it would be a little bit harder.
But you can blow up all these fucking devices. You're good.
Oh, but only he could, because he's... Because remember, him and Michael Ironside...
Oh, they're the best scanners.
They're the best scanners, because they've been getting the juice from the beginning.
I don't know, dude. This is a tough one. This is tough.
I love... This was a tougher segment than I was planning for it to be. But, yeah, I would be a scanner, I think.
Yeah.
That's the final answer.
There you go. I dig it.
So, this is actually our third installment of our Cronenberg Christmas, which is wild considering, you know, it's our third one.
Yes.
We've been doing this. This is the third time.
3 years. Nice. I know.
So, The Fly and Videodrome and now Scanners. Out of the three that we've covered thus far, which is your favorite? Mm-hmm. And what are you looking forward to covering in the future?
So, my favorite so far of these three is The Fly.
Okay.
I personally think The Fly is just... It's a classic.
Yeah.
It's a classic as you can get. the fact that it was remade from a 50s premise is, to me, just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Videodrome and Scanners, to me, they both kind of have their benefits and their... They're both pretty similar to me in terms of just how I value them, even though they're both very different movies.
I agree.
I'm looking forward to, actually, one day whenever we get to cover it, it might be for a while, a childhood movie I used to watch called Existence, which is a Cronenberg movie.
Yes, it is. I was just looking at that.
With Ethan Hawke, I believe, is in it, and some blonde chick who I can't remember. But that one was sort of competing with The Matrix in terms of, like, the overall non-reality premise of it.
Ah.
And it was around the same time, so I don't think it was influenced by it at all. But it definitely took a way different approach. And it was
Wait, who did you think was in it?
Ethan Hawke?
No, Jude Law?
Jude Law! Yes.
Not Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke.
Willem Dafoe is in it?
Willem Dafoe's in it.
Oh, wow.
Who's the lady? Who's the lead woman?
Sarah Polley?
Don't know who that is. Okay.
Maybe? Yeah. In terms of top listed cast? Yeah.
Hmm.
We have Jude Law, Ian Holm.
It was Jude Law, not Ethan Hawke. I'm
John McKellar. Yeah, Sarah Polley. Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, Existence, man. That's
Holy
the one
shit.
I'm kind of looking forward to because it is super sci-fi.
Okay, yeah, I can tell. It's a science fiction thriller film. It follows a game designer named Allegra Geller, who's played... Oh, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
There you go.
Sorry.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah.
And Jude Law.
Yeah. Who finds herself targeted by assassins while playing a virtual reality game of her own creation.
It could also be lame. It could all... But the way they get in there is fucking weird.
I can imagine it's pretty
dorky. It's weird. I will tell you that right now. But I you know, because to me, like, these have all been very slick, kind of cool movies so far. So I want to see one where he, like, kind of...
It's a little bit later. We're getting into the later 90s.
Yeah, he's kind of dropped the ball. I don't want to say dropped the ball a little bit, but he's definitely doing something different with that.
Yes.
Which I would be very interested in checking out one of these days in the future. But how about you?
For me, definitely The Fly.
Yes.
Still one of my favorite movies ever.
Such a good movie.
It's so good. It's such a fun combination of sci-fi and body horror and just fun 80s, like, nonsensical bullshit.
Yes.
I think that one definitely still holds true as my favorite. I'm open for The Fly to be dethroned. So far, it hasn't yet.
Let's see as we go along.
But, yeah, so I think that one, and also kind of going off of what you were saying, I can't really, after that, The Fly's been my favorite. I can't compare Scanners and Videodrome because they're completely different.
They're so different.
So I can't really rate them as, like, this is my second favorite, this is my least favorite so far. Because, like, they're totally different movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're both sci-fi, but whatever. That being said, I'm really excited for the day that we... Oh, there's so many.
I know. We might have to do Cronenberg Easter also.
No, we're not. No. Cronenberg Christmas... No.
All the Jesus holidays.
No, we're going to be around for a while, so we're going to get to them.
It's Easter time. It's Cronenberg. Crack open the egg.
it's like...
Wow, that's a fleshy egg. Jesus.
Gross. Yeah, I mean, there's The Dead Zone I'm looking forward to, which I've never seen, because that's a good... We get Cronenberg and Stephen King on that one. So that'll be fun. That'll be a really
fun
one. But ultimately, I'm very excited for Crash.
Yes.
Like,
see?
That one just seems so fucked up.
Oh my god. That's so... Like, when we talk about just what his filmography is so far from just those little ones we pulled, like, that's a dynamic career right there.
Absolutely.
With the premise of he does gore good.
It's true. he did A Dangerous Method, which was from 2011, which I know was pretty... It talks about Carl Jung. So, you know.
Okay.
It's like talking about, you know, Freud. It's Freudian.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fucked.
It's going to be an interesting take. Jeez.
God. And that one has Michael Fassbender and Keira Knightley in it.
Oh, that's fine.
And Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, because he also did the History of Violence, too?
I believe so. Yes, he did A History of Violence. The last movie he did was Maps to the Stars, and that was in 2014.
Man,
so
I wonder where our boy is now.
I mean, he's probably enjoying his retirement. His son, however, in many, 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 many years, if we ever get through his entire filmography, his son just released a movie.
Oh, really? What
yes.
was it?
Thanks for putting me on the spot, Anthony. Brandon Cronenberg just released a movie called Possessor. And it just came out, like, this year, like, in quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard, like, nothing but really good things. Like,
okay.
It's a lot of people's favorite films of 2020. So
that sounds cool.
So
gotta check it out.
And it holds true to... his dad's kind of
his inclinations.
His inclinations.
Okay. All right.
So it'll and it has Sean Bean in it and Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Dude, okay.
So, I think it'll be a good time when we ever get to that. If I ever get really sick of David Cronenberg, we can always just jump over to Brandon Cronenberg.
Works for me. Works for me.
So,
Brandon Cronenberg Easter. There we go.
No, it's Christmas. Okay, so I think that's it. Last question. Rate this movie out of 5 vials of ephemeral.
I'm going to give it 3.5 vials.
Okay.
3.5 vials of ephemeral. Like.
In normal Cronenberg tradition, I'm going to give it 4.
There you go.
I always rank higher than you.
That's true. For the Cronenberg films, I dig it, though. I mean, it makes sense to me. It was almost a 4 for me also.
Yeah.
I just think if I'm going 5 or a little higher than that, that's going to the fly.
Yeah, totally. No, this was really good. I really liked it. Obviously, the only reason I gave it a 4 was just because I think the writing could have been a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he was writing literally the morning before.
Yeah,
so,
excusable.
I'm going to make excuses. I can make excuses for David Cronenberg all day long because mm-hmm. I love him.
That's true. I agree.
I think that's it. That was Scanners from 1981, written and directed by David Cronenberg.
Woohoo!
Cronenberg Christmas 2020 is a wrap.
Yes, we did it.
Welcome to December. Holy shit, what a year.
Oh my god, fucking A.
What a year.
I keep forgetting that we're like, it's done.
It's, yeah, 2020.
Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. I saw something on Twitter that was just like, you know, it's going to be March in 3 months. And I was like, I want to die.
Stop. No. Don't even tell me that. I'm gonna be older. God.
Well, you just spent a whole year in like quarantine limbo.
From my birthday on.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
And it's gonna be your birthday again in 3 months, which means that you've spent pretty much a whole year just in quarantine limbo, which is
It's fucked. It's weird. It's not been a bad year.
No. It's just been fucked.
It's been different.
It's been different.
A little dystopian.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know.
But hey, we've made it another.
We're still here.
So we got December.
We had a couple COVID scares, but we're still here.
Yes, but we got to be safe. But so this month, though, we got ourselves some Christmassy treats.
Yay! I'm so excited for this month. We have some fun stuff.
Got a guest next week.
Yes. You want to hint at next week?
Next week, we are tackling the 4th entry in something that we've already tackled.
I mean,
and
you
it's,
guys.
It's good. It was definitely a change of pace for the franchise, and I think you guys are gonna like it. We've had good reception on our last episodes of these, so, and of course it's a childhood fear of mine, so there you go.
That should tell you everything you need to know.
Exactly.
And then for the rest of the month, we have some fun stuff coming up.
Absolutely. Definitely keeping in with the season.
Tis the season. Alright, thank you so much everyone for listening. As per usual, if you like what you heard, please consider writing us a review and, you know, leaving a 5-star rating on iTunes mm-hmm. if that is something you have access to. You know, the best Christmas gift of all.
Yes, absolutely.
It really does mean the world to us. And, you know, the messages we get from you guys is just really
makes good. Us feel good. Makes us feel good.
It really does.
Yes.
Because we are currently living in a hellscape. So, and you guys keep us going. And I hope, you know, this is a little bit of a respite from your very, very chaotic lives, I'm sure.
I agree. Yeah.
So that being said, if you would like to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod, and then you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And then you can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
That's me.
And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. All right. I think that's it for this week. Thank you. We will see you next week. Until then. If you could read people's minds, keep it to yourself.
Yes, I agree with that. And watch out for sitting next to somebody who has those crazy eyes.
Yeah, look out for crazy eyes. Mm-hmm. All right, bye guys.
See ya.